Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
The only thing that we would hang banners for, that we put up around this building, is world championships.
BTS, BTA.
And, you know, the message is clear. You know, we just had to play better.
Everybody wants to take a chip and dip it in that salsa, you know what I'm saying?
You know, people had us as a really good team, but I don't think they really understand how good we can really be.
Guys, this is Jeff Giannis.
And Giannis is on a stopper to the Blues. What a cat, that's insane.
You're listening to the Poor Man's Packers Podcast.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Prince Packers Podcast, No One Packers Podcast in the state of our minds. I am Spencer, joined this week with Todd. Todd.
Hello, hello.
And the Green Bay Packers, what do you know? They're pretty fucking good at football, winning 13-27. All is right in the world. God is real. God is good. We have a loving, just God. Todd, I mean, how are you feeling?
Honestly, I couldn't feel better about where this team is. Not only, like, not to hop into it too quick, but, like, Jordan Love, secretly, even though the what were we calling those thoughts? The intrusive thoughts?
Mm-hmm.
Jordan Love does not suck.
Oh, wow.
That was super fun.
Okay.
Micah Parsons also doesn't suck. You know who might suck? The coordinators for the Lions.
Hey, we're
they
geniuses.
Might not be good.
Yeah, it, I mean, again, just kicking off, it's, and I'm sure maybe other fans have thought this too. It's like, when's the last time you felt this good about this team? It's like, in recent memory, it was beating the Cowboys in the playoffs. I don't think there was any victory last year that we really felt really good about. Thanksgiving was fun against the Dolphins. But even like beating the Jags, we kind of eked that out. You know, beating the Bears, we were barely able to do it with a blocked kick. There wasn't like a bunch of barn burners last year. And for the first Matt LaFleur home opener, you know, to be week one, it's probably like the best win, I feel like, just about since like the 2018 my knee game against the Bears. Like that was the one where it was like, oh my God. Rodgers broke his collarbone the year before, busted his knee in the first half of the first game. We're like, oh my God, he's going to be dead again this whole year. And then he comes back in the second half. Like, it was a different feeling of happiness because it was, oh my God, Rodgers isn't dead. Oh my God, he came back and won. But this team.
That was a Khalil Mack game too, right?
That was the Khalil Mack game, yeah.
With, right. That was such a good
Deshaun
game.
Kizer coming in the second quarter, getting sacked like two or three times in a row by Khalil Mack or whatever. And then Randall Cobb, you know, stabbing the hearts of all the Bears fans once again to, you know, put us over the edge in the fourth quarter.
Yep.
But this is just different. You know, even for, you know, I don't know what the Lions are going to be this year. I wouldn't be shocked if they're like a nine-win team or something. It's obviously going way over the top just based off of one game, but it's just, once again, it's not just losing Ben Johnson. It's replacing him with a guy who doesn't have a lot of experience calling plays. But God, it's, and plus, fuck, everything felt right. The Mike McCarthy coming out at halftime, very cool. They celebrated the 15 years of the 2010 Super Bowl. Very cool. And then Michael Parsons, we can talk about him a little bit here before we get into it, but one running out of the tunnel, very cool. They set that up.
That was fun.
I believe they usually work from front to back, so it's like Xavier McKinney's one of the last guys announced, but they switched it up this week just to get that pop. it was funny because in the locker room after, he said they can go back to, you know, having the captains go last. So again, a very much a team guy there. But that, and the other thing that keeps popping up, because you think that like last season, what if you had to pick out a couple plays that you remember from last year, like what comes up in your mind?
Gosh, is this like a trick because there isn't that many that stick out?
Exactly.
That's how I, because it's
Tucker Kraft, touchdown, that bullet. It's the Jaden Reed deep bomb against the Rams.
Honestly, it's most of it, if I'm really thinking of like memorable ones off the top of my head, they're pretty much all Josh Jacobs runs.
Yeah, that too. The Honey Badger stiff-arming him into next week.
The one against the Eagles where he just like could not be tackled and then he made it down to like the one?
Yes, in the playoff game. That was a good one too.
That was so much fun.
There was, Carl Brooks blocking the kick. It's like, but there's a couple of them. I think the only play we're going to remember from this game and like visualize is the Micah Parsons chasing down Jared Goff. A play that really didn't matter in the grand scheme of things. But fourth quarter, the one guy that this whole season is, you know, revolving around here. And it's like the longest sack that you could really watch on a football field where you see him come out of, you know, everyone's talked about it now. It's like a National Geographic lion chasing a fucking gazelle or whatever.
Yep.
But it's like the way he weaves on one side, weaves back on the other, and it's like a slow drum roll, and then he sacks Jared Goff. It's like that's the play that we're going to remember, I feel like, more than anything for like the start of the season here when like Micah Parsons officially became a Green Bay Packer.
When you watch that play too, like the way that he explodes out of the backfield, like he had, I think Goff was like right to be comfortable. He's out of the pocket. Like he felt pretty safe. Like
we've seen
the last time he
times.
Checked over his left shoulder, everybody's blocked on the left side. He bails to the right and he's like, fine. But the way like Micah Parsons is like, how many players just a free release could have caught him there? It's insane how fast Micah Parsons is. Like, that is, like, the elite athleticism that I guess I didn't realize. Like, I think we talked about this before. Like, it seemed more like he's... It almost seems, like, effortless for him sometimes, I guess. That was, like, my take anyway. Then you watch him, and, like, some of these, like, when you're really watching him, it's phenomenal how quickly he moves laterally. And then, like, his explosion is, like... That's why, I mean, he was making... Is it Penei?
Yes, Penei Sewell.
Penei Sewell.
Like the noodle.
He looked like a bitch. He looked like Don Barclay out there. Yeah. It was crazy. Yeah. I mean, it was just amazing.
And I mean, just that play, too, like you watch it back, and it's almost like there's a glitch, like watching the All 22 or whatever, like from the side, because all of a sudden it's like, yeah, he's chasing him, but it's like the last 5 yards, all of a sudden he's just there, and you see the sideline erupt, the crowd erupts. It's like you couldn't get many better moments of that. I'm so glad he was able to get a sack. Not just at the beginning of the game, but at the end when it's like we needed that little cherry on top of a great win. Throw out the Isaac Tesla catch that, you know, that was some bullshit, whatever. That was
a minute left. That was such garbage.
That was another glitch, too. It didn't actually happen.
Again, nice catch, though.
Very nice catch, yeah. He's like fucking, I assumed he was like a small slot guy. He's like 6'3 or 6'4 or something. Whatever.
Somebody said it. I think it actually was maybe Billy said it, that it took like... the early nomination for catch of the year to score a touchdown against that Packers defense.
That's right.
Like that's basically what it was. So shout out to Billy. That is what it was. Like that was an amazing catch.
But yeah, we'll get into it here. Obviously, you know, we're going to talk about the offense and defense, break down the game a little bit. We will have take news. You know, this is our first regular season game in, you know, a little less than a year. So we'll have take news. We are going to talk about a little bit about not exactly Mark Murphy, but the structure of the Packers and something that popped up with the Mike Silver piece. But hey, it's actually not as bad as it initially looked. We'll have Stump Spenny, some Packers trivia, and then we'll of course, preview the Commanders game. So first, you know, we're going to jump into it. I guess before we get, we're actually going to start with the defense, which I don't know if we've ever done that before. Maybe once or twice back in the day. Have we had a shutout in the last 7 years? We might have had like maybe close to.
We had a shutout? I don't know.
Oh, fuck. I don't remember. But one thing.
Maybe.
One other thing I want to bring up is we did elect full season captains this year. I don't know if you saw this. You heard about this. Jordan Love, Josh Jacobs, Tucker Kraft, Rashawn Gary, Quay Walker, Xavier McKinney and Isaiah McDuffie, which is pretty funny. Usually they've done it week by week, and then maybe in the playoffs they elect captains, but they did go with electing full season captains. I don't know if you put this together, or this is also the first time under Matt LaFleur that Za'Darius Smith and Jair Alexander were not on the roster, which is probably the number one reason why this happened, because, you know, Jair always kind of talked
you
about
think
captains.
That that's why?
I think if Jair came back, we would not have elected season-long captains. I think that's a big part of it, yes. But I'm glad that they actually did it, and the guys that they picked, for the most part, the right guys. I mean, can you think of – we're obviously in the locker room all the time. Can you think of anyone who should have been there?
I think, like, from the fan perspective, the only questionable one there is, like, Quay. Just because he's had those pretty bad moments. He's had a couple of them where he's just like
–
I'm saying from the fan perspective. I'm not saying that he could be a great guy in the locker room, and he's obviously passionate.
Yes.
You gotta give him credit for that. But like there's the tunnel moment, and then didn't he hit the trainer? Wasn't that him?
All 3 years ago. One, he pushed the practice squad player on the sideline. Two,
that's right.
He pushed the Lions trainer.
The practice squad guy was in shorts, just for context. it was a little bit of like, I don't know. He had a couple moments that got him a little bit infamous with, you know, the public, I guess. I don't know.
The national media even kind of knows.
The national. Yeah. Like not.
Quay Walker. Yeah. But I think the big thing for that and why he was elected captain, McCarthy, LaFleur said that they did vote on captains. The players did. I don't know if anyone cares more about football on this team than Quay Walker, and like takes it more personally. Wildy's talked about it like a bunch, how he beats himself up when he has a bad game, which I don't know if you know this about the first 2 years of his career, a lot of bad games. But I mean, you know, this game too, pretty good, and I think he's starting to kind of, you know, get shit together here, so whatever. Well, Isaiah McDuffie,
see him sniff out that screen.
Ooh, Quay knows ball now, it seems like, at least.
He was being aggressive. It was fun to watch.
We already talked about, yeah. And then, like, it would have been weird if Micah got it, whatever. I don't know. Doesn't matter. Defense. We're going to talk about defense first. Again, I don't know if you've ever talked about the defense before first. Couple notes just off the top. One, it feels like Jared Goff never even threw a deep ball in this game. You know, there was like one in the first quarter. That was about it.
There was that deep out that St. Brown caught on the sidelines, which was another hell of a catch. Like, I think the credit goes to basically like forcing the receivers to make amazing catches to go anywhere with it. I mean, that was, otherwise he was just taking everything underneath. The entire fourth quarter, we were just giving him everything underneath, and he knew it, and he was just grabbing it. Like, that was all that they could do.
You know what this game was a lot like?
No.
And maybe, I don't know, it just, maybe it's Mike Pettine too, but Joe Barry, like the 1 year where he was pretty solid, where it's like dink and dunk, slow down the field, but then you get the red zone and then you kind of stop him.
That's gross.
Best of the best Joe Barry.
I don't like that comparison at all. I think Joe Barry would have had, there would have been no blitz because Joe Barry is allergic to the blitz.
We'll send four. We'll send five. That's it.
Yes. And then the corners would be not on the screen when you're watching. Like, that's the other problem. So it's not a Joe Barry defense.
Very fair. I did forget about
part. We were aggressive. Like, that is the total difference. Like, we were aggressive and we rallied to the ball. I would say that was like the two things.
I have that written down too, rallying to the ball. I also feel like every week one, though, the defense rallies to the ball very well. Even under Joe Barry, we did that quite a bit. So we'll see how long this goes on for. You know, guys are going to get banged up. But, I mean, just again, the mentality of this team right now, all around, especially after trading for Micah Parsons, which we kind of talked about too, it's not just, hey, you get this great player, but it's Goody and the organization saying, hey, we're going all in for the Super Bowl right now, so you guys better buck up, you know, try your darndest, and, you know, we'll just see what happens on game day.
Put up or shut up.
A couple other stats. Gibbs had the lowest yards for a player ever with 10 receptions in a game, 31 yards. He also averaged 2.1 yards per carry. Pretty good for one of the more explosive players in the NFL. Sam Laporta finished with 79 yards, which was surprising. I didn't realize he had that many yards in the game, so good on him. And
he had one big play, didn't he? I believe.
Yeah, I think so. Let's see. Yeah, 32 yards. That's pretty good for a tight end. And then, you know, we talked about the Tesla touchdown. Very cool, but whatever. Maybe it shouldn't have counted. I don't know. But defense, breaking it down, defensive end, we got to start with Micah Parsons. We talked about it a little bit before, but finished with 3 pressures, the 1 sack. He had 30 snaps, which ended up being 45% of the snaps on defense. And snaps will differ this year, I'm sure, just because, you know, he's more of a premium player than we've had in the past. But just looking at, like, the snaps from last year in the playoffs against the Eagles, Rashawn Gary led all ends with, I think it was, like, 54%. So I'm sure that the rotation will change. But again, he wasn't very far off of a full rotation. And they did say, too, that he played more than they originally expected, especially down the stretch there when it was just a pass first scenario. Micah Parsons was out there like that full last drive, which was kind of fun to see, and one of the reasons why he had that sack.
I mean, also too, what was interesting, I thought, when I saw the snap counts come out, was that Gary had 71%. When last year did Gary play as much as he did on Sunday? I mean, that was like, it was crazy. And he got a sack. I mean, it was, I don't know, it was a productive day for everybody. So
it feels like they usually do like the full sail rotation where it's like Elvin and Gary. And then like back in the day, it would be Brenton Cox and God, why can't I remember his
name? Mosby.
Mosby, Aaron Mosby is on the practice squad now. Like that kind of stuff happening. So we'll see what happens here on out. Parsons, one of his, you know, early snaps too, that pressure on Penei Sewell obviously very much affected the quick pass from Jared Goff and Evans jumping up and making that pick. Very, very cool.
Evan Williams.
Yep. Ben Solak tweeted this out, that when Parsons was on the field, Goff threw at 2.8 seconds. When Parsons was off the field, it was 3.36, so a full half a second more. When he was, and it's like, I wonder how much of that was the actual pressure that Parsons forced versus, oh my God, Michael Parsons is on the field.
Right. And I also do feel like it's just the general effect of, like, you put a superstar out there, everybody else is getting less attention.
Yes.
So that helps. Like, in general, it felt like the pocket collapsed better when he was out there because he was getting double teamed every time.
Another thing that was funny is he didn't know the pregame celebration. One, he didn't know where
that
to,
was funny.
He didn't know where to line
I also
up.
Felt bad for him. Yeah, that's... I was like, nobody told him, hey, we go out here and we do a little, you know, what would you call it? I don't know anything about basketball.
Jump shot?
But don't they take a step back?
Oh, step back, I believe jumper. It's called a step back jumper.
That's, yeah, we'll cut that part. Step back jumper is what they do. But yeah, like, couldn't you just tell him? Like, hey, by the way, we go out here and we do this step back jumper. Like, give him a little heads up.
I almost wonder if they would have, like, brought it up if it was a lesser player that was new to the team. But it's like, could you imagine, like, you know, I don't know, Carl Brooks walking up to Michael Parsons and be like, hey, just so you know, when we're done warming up, we do this little thing and then we jump up in the air, pretend to shoot a basketball.
I think instead of not telling him, I think you should tell him.
I suppose, but he was late. He was late on it. The shot clock might have been out when he got his pass off. But I guess, he didn't even know where, like, the defensive line warmed up when he first ran out there, too. Like, they had to direct him to what part of the field to go to.
Yeah, so that is crazy. But I guess, too, like, that part, some of the stuff is, like situationally, it's like, yeah, we go over that stuff at the beginning of training camp, and then we never talk about it again. So, like, mm-hmm. They're not going to talk about it in practice.
LVN, great game, one of the better games of his career, half a sack, had 4 pressures. I forgot who tweeted this out, but he had 4 pressures. He had 4 pressures in the first 7 games of last year, so that's a bit of a improvement if you can do the math there. He played like 6 snaps at defensive tackle, which was pretty cool. He even dropped back into coverage one of those times and made a play on that little screen, I believe, I think it was one of the throws to Gibbs, unless it was David Montgomery, it was to the back. The other thing is Micah Parsons.
Yeah, it was Gibbs.
Okay. Micah Parsons loves him. And I do wonder how much of it is Parsons, you know, naturally just doing that, being a good guy and being like, hey, this guy's cool. I forgot who did he compare him to? Was he calling him?
Oh,
did he say Julius Peppers?
Yes. He said Julius Peppers and he said somebody else who was like a bull rusher.
Yeah. Which is, I guess, is a pretty good company to be, you know, compared to. So he's talked him up a bunch. He said LVN's going to have a career year. The other thing that I don't think I brought up.
Not hard to do.
Yeah. Very good point. That I don't think we brought up last week, but Tom Silverstein, I think it was Tom Silverstein, talked about how, unless it was Rob Domofsky, he's one of those two, they talked to LVN and how kind of distraught he was, and how even after the Micah Parsons trade, like, he wasn't in the locker room the first two times during, like, interviews, because, like, he probably didn't want to talk to the media because he was getting usurped in that starting position. Apparently, yep. Even last year, he was upset that Preston Smith came back, which I don't think anyone had heard of. I mean, Preston Smith, if he was still on his contract with the Packers, he would still have this year and next year. I don't believe he's on an NFL roster right now. So it's just...
Oh, really?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure. I mean, we traded him to Pittsburgh, and I haven't heard anything about him signing since then. So I don't think he's on a team right now. But either way,
that's crazy.
Getting ready for a career year probably from LVN, whatever we get out of him. Rashawn Gary, 1.5 sacks. Very cool. His one sack, the solo sack, was when Micah Parsons wasn't on the field. So that's very cool to see as well. In the 7 plays that Micah Parsons, Lucas Van Ness, and Rashawn Gary played together in week 1, the Packers allowed just 6 total yards. I don't know how many. Did you hear what the name of that package is?
I was just going to ask you the exact same thing. Did you hear what they call it?
Cheetah.
I love it almost as much as NASCAR.
Yeah.
The NASCAR package just gets my blood flowing.
NASCAR package kind of has a better ring to it than Cheetah package. And also Cheetah, it's like...
Yeah.
Lucas Van Ness, Rashawn Gary especially. It's like they're a little too big to be Cheetahs.
You know what the Cheetah package should be? It should be Parsons, Quay, and Cooper all at off-ball linebacker.
Ooh.
That's the Cheetah package. And good. They all walk up to the line.
I wouldn't.
Packers can hire me if we need to come up with any fun ideas for naming formations. We'll link my contact info in the bio.
JJ Enagbare and Brenton Cox both played too. I don't know really if they did anything. Brenton Cox got hurt. He hasn't practiced, I think, since. We'll see. We'll talk about that when we get to the...
I do feel like I saw JJ make a couple plays in the run game.
Okay, there you go. That is
for what it's that's worth. I feel like.
That's your JJ scoop. Defensive line... Defensive tackle, Devonta Wyatt, he played 73% of the snaps. You know, once again, talking about the snap counts and everything, that also seems very high for the defensive lineman. We rotated those guys a lot. He did have the one sack, I believe that was in the fourth quarter. That was very fun, too. I think that was on, like, third down or something. It was a big sack when they were driving again. Colby Wooden.
I think he had 2 sacks, but one was taken back from a flag.
Didn't
he have 2?
I don't remember that, but you very well could be right. There was a whole thing with like Micah Parsons snaps too. Like some people had 30, some had 29, some had 28, and that's because some of his plays, there was a penalty that came off and some people counted, some people don't. Colby Wooden, probably the best game of his career. I mean, once again, this time a year ago in Brazil, he was a healthy scratch for that game. And now he's, I don't know, one of the more important players on the defensive line. Once again, I mean, the front 7 now, it's like every one of these guys is pretty fucking solid as far as the starters go.
Isn't that crazy, too? Like, you take a guy who was a healthy scratch a year ago, and he has this kind of game. Like, is it a fluke? Like what is the difference in a year that it makes for a guy who's already been playing football his whole life, right? Like, I don't know, it's just wild that, like, that 1 year in time can make that big of a difference.
Yeah, and I mean, he put on like 15 pounds, I think, this offseason, so he knew he was going to be playing a lot more in the middle there. But
was he the one, too, that he got a call from his dad, and his dad was like, shut him up? Was that
yes,
him?
Yes, that's what it was, which was pretty cool. Again, that's the other thing I like about him, because I didn't really like Colby Wooden early on, because in like his interviews and stuff, he seemed very immature. I still remember like after the home win against the Saints, Jordan Love's that comeback victory in the fourth quarter. Like, there was a video, and this is just me being an old man, but it was, like, Colby Wooden's, like, jump up, and I was like, yeah. He's, like, looking at the social media person for the Packers, like, hell yeah, there we go, Jordan Love, that's what we do, blah, blah, blah. And it was just very phony for a guy who, like, didn't play in the game. Like, you had nothing to do with this. What are you doing getting involved here? And it's, like, he's talking a little bit less. In this interview, after the game, he was pissed because it was the quote that you're talking about. One, it was... Well, he had the play at the goal line where he tackled Gibbs like at the at,
where he wasn't blocked.
At the one where he wasn't blocked. Did you hear his quote on that? It was
He was like, they're not going to block me or something, wasn't that?
I'm going to be real. It just opened up like the Red Sea. Like, dang, they didn't block me. I just had to make the tackle.
Yeah.
And like I was saying earlier in the week, he said that he took the disrespect after the Kenny Clark trade very personally, where he was like, everyone on this defensive line got disrespected by that. And his dad called him and said, hey, shut them up, which is what you were referring to. So very, and he was pissed. It was, it's one thing to like read the quote, but to hear him say it, it's like there was no nonsense when he was reading that off.
Yeah, that's I don't know. He played really well. I mean, in general, that defensive interior played so much better than I thought they were going to. I think the expectations for that room in general were pretty low. Even like obviously Kenny leaves, but in general, I don't know. I wasn't hot on that defensive interior going into the season anyway. They underperformed so much last year.
Yeah, and it was one of the things too where I believe Goody said after we traded Kenny, or maybe he said it earlier in the offseason, that he wanted to get those younger guys more involved. And, you know, to piggyback off of what you said too, it's like, yeah, last week I think a couple times I was saying I feel better about the corners than I do about the defensive line room. And you know, 1 week into the season, the defensive line room looks a little bit better than the corners.
They look pretty good.
Yeah, off-ball linebackers, Edgerrin Cooper. I mean, once again, if everyone said it, but if Micah Parsons wasn't what everyone was talking about on defense, it would be Edgerrin Cooper. Showed up to the game. I don't know if you saw this. His nickname is Cowboy Coop. He showed up to the game in assless chaps. He did have jeans on underneath. Don't worry.
Mm.
Nope. good reaction. Nope. No booty was showing. But the Lions did show their ass. He had 12 tackles, 8 defensive stops in the run game, 5 defensive stops in coverage. And it came out today, Micah Parsons has him on his fantasy team, and he had 36 points this week, which is good in itself.
The thing, like, I think it's so, what am I trying to say here? It's so impressive what Edgerrin Cooper's doing, and I feel like it's not appreciated. Like, he's so underrated just because, like, I don't know. It's hard to, like, there's a couple off-ball linebackers in the league that people really know their name. Fred Warner is the top of the list. But, like, right now, after, like, seeing what Edge did at the end of last year and how he's playing right now, it's like, man, like, Cooper's got to be, he's got to be near the top of that list. Like, Fred Warner, Edgerrin Cooper, who else would you put up there as like an off-ball linebacker?
That's...
I mean, there's a couple guys that are like kind of like your gap stuffers that are really good in the run game. But like Cooper, the way he sniffs out stuff from sideline to sideline is it's insane. And the way he fills gaps and blitzes up the middle is just like absolutely, it's just so fun to watch. So I don't know. It's one of those things where, like you said, if Micah isn't there, all we're talking about is probably Edgerrin Cooper and Quay making plays because that would be the next feature event.
And it's like you're saying there too, just where he stands in the league, there aren't really those game-breaking inside linebackers that are young right now. You know, all the guys you mentioned are older dudes for the most part. I think, didn't Fred Warner get hurt again or whatever this week? I could be wrong about that.
Did he really? I don't know.
He might have, but it's one of those things. And your guy, Rodney, threw it out there. He's like, he might be the best inside linebacker in the league. So we'll see. Very, very happy to see what happens with that. Also, Quay Walker, we talked about him being captain. He finished with 9 tackles, which was third most on the team. He had 2 tackles for loss. Once again, it seems like the game is finally slowing down for him. He is in a contract year. Again, you know, looking at this team, big picture, it's only week one. You know, maybe we'll be pushing for a Super Bowl here. But again, the guys that you're looking at in the contract year, it's like Romeo Dubs, it's Quay Walker. I think this might be the best this roster is going to be over the next 3 years just because of the Micah Parsons trade. So hopefully we make a push here, you know, and hopefully Quay keeps doing well and he'll get paid a boatload and we'll get a nice third round comp pick for him or something. But nice to see Quay finally putting it together after a lot of Quay, what the fuck are you doing plays that we've seen in the past. Isaiah McDuffie, Tyron Hopper, there was a bit of a rotation. Isaiah McDuffie early on was the third linebacker to get in the game. second half, it was Hopper. I don't have the snaps pulled up right now, but...
It was 28% for Duffy and 2% for Hopper.
Okay.
They weren't running in the second half, like, pretty much at all. There was no linebacker. There was no third linebacker, it seemed.
Secondary? Keyshawn Nixon, Valentine McKinney all played 100% of the snaps. That's pretty good. Again, the... Why can't I think of Evan's first name? Evan Williams. I have
Evan Williams?
Yeah, I have Evan Williams. I have Evans written down for whatever reason. Yes. Once again, playing like Micah Hyde, the diving, very quick interception. Again, he didn't have a lot of big plays during training camp, so it's cool that he had one of those in the first game. The rotation was also a little bit weird, where at the beginning of the game, Bullard was the starting safety on defense, the deep safety. We'd only really seen him mostly in the slot. Really since halfway through the year last year. It does seem like, and I forgot who really pointed this out, Bullard is better in the run game. Evan Williams is better pass coverage. So I think when the Lions were in very clear running situations for the entire drive, you know, first series of the game, Bullard went in as the deep safety. And then once it got to a, you know, they're only going to be passing the ball situation, it once again went to Evan Williams at safety. So I'm curious to see how that goes going forward. The penalty on Xavier was
But Bullard out-snapped. Oh, I was going to say Bullard out-snapped Evan Williams, but I assume that's because Bullard was coming down in the box and playing in place of that third linebacker. That's why the third linebacker snaps are so low.
Sure. Okay. Yeah, there you go. That makes sense, especially once again in the second half when they were passing the ball a lot more too.
Right.
Yeah, the flag on Xavier McKinney. I didn't even see the replay of like whoever it was
that
hitting him with his helmet.
Was so dumb.
It's very lame. Hopefully
that was. Are you talking? And then who's the Williams receiver?
Jameson.
Detroit. Jameson Williams. Then when he catches that ball in front of this, like, I don't know. Five plays later, Jameson Williams catches the ball over on the left sideline and gets up and screams in X's face. And X is like, puts his hands up and looks at the ref like, seriously? Like, he can do that, but I can't stand over and look at him? And it's just like, yeah, this is dumb. Like, I'm fine, whatever, if you're going to call something, but just, like, call it both ways. Like, that's the dumbest thing.
It's obviously something they're emphasizing early in the season here, which usually happens with some of these new rules. It's very dumb. The last like 3 years, all the white owners in the league, they're like, oh, hey, we have to really make sure we're not dancing too much for touchdowns or celebrating plays. And it's like,
that's so stupid.
The emphasis seems to be on like the defender on this. Like, I don't think it'll get called that often on offense. Obviously, we don't want to test it. I don't want to see Tucker Kraft like yelling forward and all of a sudden he gets 15 yards for some stupid shit like that. But that's my only assumption for what's going on there. Yeah, Bullard and Nixon seem to be the two guys in the secondary that were maybe the weak links on defense. They combined gave up over 100 yards passing, but it's like, who else? You know, I mean, when you give up 13 points and realistically it was, you know, 6 points or whatever, it's like, what are you really going to get upset about? You know, like, eventually they're going to have to find little cracks in this defense.
And, like, when you're out there, I mean, the Lions have talented guys, right? Like, regardless of maybe their scheme was not where it's supposed to be, whatever. But, like, when Amon-Ra St. Brown is out there, like, you're going to give up some yards. Like, he's going to get a couple on you. And that's just what happens. Likewise, too, like, when you have a tight end, what's his name now? I'm blanking. Laporta. Like, Laporta's going to catch the ball up the middle of the field and get some yards. Like, it's just going to happen. But, like, the way I think your point earlier, too, about, like, being so stout in the red zone, like, that is more of what matters than giving up those yards.
With that, I mean, that's all I got for defense. I mean, we went pretty long there. It was pretty cool. It's, once again, very rare to have a game where it's like all you really remember for the most part is like how the defense looked and how this is, you know, don't want to once again get too ahead of ourselves, but it seems like this is going to be a defense first team, and I don't know, I'm very excited. It's fun. It's fun to just look to, you know, we bitch about all last year, like rushing four and getting pressure. And it's like, what guy am I going to look at rushing the quarterback? It's very, very fun watching this defense right now.
Well, and just like the fact that it wasn't just Micah. I think that's like, for me, that's like almost the most fun part, that it's like Micah had one sack. Devontae Wyatt had a sack. Gary had a sack and a half, and LVN had half a sack. So that's like, that's way more exciting than what I was expecting. I was expecting it's just going to be the Micah show. You know, and then there's these other guys out there. But, like, he makes everybody better. And also, Gary had a sack when Micah wasn't out there, too. So that's promising.
And once again, it's like they came into that game knowing they were going to have to get rid of the ball quick. Like, again, Goff was just slinging it. The depth of the targets was very low. It's like I'm very curious to see how this is going to go when we're playing dog shit teams in the future. Like, still don't think the Lions are going to be the juggernauts of last year, but... we'll see.
Also, inexperienced quarterbacks. Like, yes. If you're getting that pressure against quarterbacks that are not Jared Goff, like, I've bashed Jared Goff plenty, but he is a pro. Like, he knows what to do with the ball. He's smart with the ball. And, like, I'm so excited to play, like, J.J. McCarthy and, like, see how he looked in the first half and, like, imagining our defense out there, you know, pursuing him. Just be fun.
Yeah. And with that, we will have a quick commercial break.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
And we are back with the offense. The offense, overall, pretty good. There's a thing with the Packers, with Matt LaFleur. There's saying all gas, no brakes, but then there's all of a sudden you're like, hey, we're going to pretend we're in traffic and we are going to brake a little bit when we're up quite a bit.
Yeah, we're going to run out of gun 3 times in a row on a pivotal drive.
Pivotal, quote, pivotal.
I mean, not really, but it could have been pivotal. Like, you just, I don't know. Just the running 3 times out of gun kills me.
Yeah, I mean, running out of gun, period, usually irks me. It's a lot better now without A.J. Dillon being on the team, but either which way. And which is also funny, did you see that the Eagles traded for Tank Bigsby?
No. What?
Yeah, like Will Shipley, I think he got banged up, the number 2 running back for the Eagles. So instead of like calling someone up and moving A.J. Dillon, they're like, no, we need to. I think they traded away a 5th and 6th round pick for Tank Bigsby so that A.J. Dillon.
Why do they even have A.J. Dillon then?
For, you know, because he's a social media running back. You got to build the brand one way or another. I don't know. I mean, the first game of the season, the most A.J. Dillon stat line ever, 3 carries. 9 yards, long run of 9 yards. That is what you get out of A.J. Dillon.
009. gross.
But anyways, back to this game, the offense overall, I mean, you got to feel good about the offense. It, you know, again, didn't really dial up that much in the second half. You think LaFleur might be just playing the long game, but that's probably me trying to be optimistic here. Obviously, we'd want to shit kick the Lions, but whatever, try to get out of the game somewhat healthy, which didn't really happen either. I didn't realize this. Mina Kimes tweeted this out. The Packers had 0 offensive penalties on Sunday, which should almost be the headline, because I feel like more often than not, when this team stubs its toe, and if you remember fucking Rashid Walker last year, where it was false starts and holdings, and to not get in our own way, like, you see what happens. You put up 27 points, and it feels like we put up 30-something points because it just came that easy for us. The other note I have is just the 3 runs in a row, stupid, but Once again, overall, I mean, you got to feel good about this offense.
Yeah, and like the offensive line wasn't going up against nobody's. That front seven is like legit. I mean, that's a front seven that is, and you saw it in the run defense too. Like early on, it was really almost impossible to run against that front seven. But yeah, like you got Aiden Hutchinson back there. Granted, it's coming off a season-ending injury, but like it did feel good to not see the false starts,
the full McCarthy,
or the holdings,
just the half
or...
McCarthy.
Wait, what?
The face paint. We only saw the half McCarthy, not the full McCarthy.
I don't get the McCarthy. What's the McCarthy?
JJ McCarthy.
Oh, the JJ. Yes. The JJ fair, McCarthy. Very fair. Sorry, yes. And we were talking about this before, too. I should have known. Yes, the JJ McCarthy. The half McCarthy is what Aiden Hutchinson does, where he does the eye paint on the one side.
Both very lame. Doing just one cheek is a lot lamer than two cheeks, especially when you have zero sacks in the game. Like, it's just, come on, what are we doing here?
Yeah, it's one of those, like, when you're wiping the eye black, the makeup off your face, yeah, and you have no sacks after the game, that's tough, right? Like, that's not a fun thing to do, right? I don't know.
But looking at things here, quarterback Jordan Love, 16 for 22, 188 yards, two touchdowns, did not get sacked. We'll talk about that with the offensive line. But again, overall, thought he played pretty well. Typical Jordan Love game, did enough to win the game, didn't get in the way too much. You know, the first couple drives, absolutely killer on third down. That was kind of the highlight, I think, for his game. Like the first half, it felt like every third down we were going to convert. We even had like third and longs. Didn't matter. We were still picking them up. Couple dumbass throws. Again, I mean, I think we talked about it at the top, but it was like the pick six got called back. He had the one throw to Anzalone or whatever that he probably should have picked off too. There might have been a penalty on that one too, but either which way, the silly body came back out. He scrambled, and then all of a sudden his body just gave out on him, and he collapsed on the field.
That was terrifying.
It was so bad. And then after, I think it was the first quarter, I think it was after the first two or three drives, we had eight different pass catchers with a reception. We did finish the game with 10 different pass catchers having a reception. That feels like very early Aaron Rodgers stuff, you know, when like Spencer Havner and Tom Crabtree and a bunch of other nobodies are getting involved. So overall, I mean, we can complain, but we also can't complain. Like I will take this from Jordan Love.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think this, too, has to be, like, Jordan Love has to be aggressive. And we saw, like, the deep balls come out, third down, pressing the ball down the field, not just dink and dunking short yardage and hoping somebody's going to, you know, not taking your check down, hoping he's going to get you five, right? And, like, if the defense turns out to be as good as what we saw week one, if that's the defense, Jordan Love has to come out and sling the ball. And, yeah, maybe there's the opportunity for a couple picks, but like with this defense, like I really liked what I saw in the aggressive game plan throwing the ball. And the only time it felt like we fizzled is when we just ran three in a row. We fizzled. And it's like, wasn't what we were expecting, right? We were expecting, you know, with the addition of Aaron Banks, you know, felt like we're getting bigger. You know, you put Sean Ryan in full time at guard. Like it just felt like this offensive line is like geared towards running the ball. Nope. We're all idiots. Yeah. We're dumb. We're going to throw the ball. We're going to throw the ball deep. We're going to throw the ball often. Like, that seems like, and I think that's, I like it. It's aggressive. Like, I feel like that's what you need to be when you have an elite defense, is be aggressive on offense, as aggressive as you can be. And I think that, this is what I heard. I don't know if it's true. Only one drop by the wide receivers?
So you're weaving in and out there, you know, talking about the run game, talking about the wideouts. We can go to the wideouts. There was no real terrible drops. It was Jaden Reed on that one beautiful deep ball from Jordan Love.
Which, if that's the one drop that they're counting, I'm not complaining.
Romeo Dobbs kind of misjudged an intermediate deep ball too, but it was a lot of good throws from Jordan Love. I mean, the deep ball to Romeo Dobbs, again, you know, very early in Jordan Love's career, we were worried about the deep ball. He looked pretty good on Sunday, so I can't complain there. We can run through the receivers right now. Romeo Doubs finished with 68 yards. He had the huge pickup of 66, which was cool. He showed up like the most emotion he ever has. I mean, he scored touchdowns.
Literally.
And done nothing. In this one, he caught the deep bomb, and he was flexing on them. Jaden Reed, he only played 18 snaps, but finished with 45 yards and a touchdown. Dontavian Wicks, the two receptions on two targets, no drops, and both of them were pretty tough too, especially that first one. It was one of those throws where the ball, you know, is zipped in there.
Dude's on him.
It just, the ball disappears. You're like, did he catch it? And then you see the ref run up, and he's like, oh, yep, first down. And I was like, all right, there you go, Dontavian. That might not have happened last year, so I was very happy with that. Matthew Golden, maybe not the coming out party that we expected to happen. But again, I mean, he did finish with the two receptions, 16 yards, caught both of his targets. His first one, I believe, was a first down pickup, too. So that was cool. He was the punt returner, too, which was a little surprising. It was a little odd how Jaden Reed was the punt returner for the rest of them outside of the one that Golden had. So I wonder if it's kind of a Keyshawn Nixon versus Jaden Reed thing that we've seen Rich do in the past, where it's almost like, I assume Golden's more the home run hitter returner. Hopefully we don't see too much more of him in the future doing that, but I guess for this one game we got out of it healthy enough. Savion Williams did have the jet sweep little putt pass thing where he picked up 1 yard. Perfect role for him to just maybe a little gadget guy, be the kick returner, fine for me. I was glad that I was a little surprised he was actually active for this game, but it made more sense with him being the kick returner. Yeah, anything you have on the receivers there from the game?
I guess I just paying attention to the snap count a little bit. It was interesting that Golden was the number two wide receiver on snap count. Romeo Doubs had 70%, Golden had 47, Wicks had 45. And then, like you said, Jaden Reed, like 38.
Overall, we will take this game from the receivers after the things we're getting last year. Again, it was one drop, maybe two drops, but nothing egregious, which we've seen at times. And the other news that broke today is Christian Watson getting a 1 year, $13.25 million extension, which is very interesting. Obviously, he is still on the PUP. He'll be out at least the first four games of the season, but he is now locked up through next year. I almost wonder if that Jameson Williams deal, where I think he's getting, God, what is it? It's north of $20 million per year. He's another speedster, too. That was a three-year contract, I believe, he got. I wonder if the Packers were just like, hey, why don't we just, you know, win-win, you're injured, we don't know what you're going to be like, we'll right. split the difference here, give you a decent deal. You know, you're making more now than you did on your entire rookie contract. I like it. We'll see. I wouldn't be surprised. We still, just with Micah's deal, with the money moving around, I think we still have cap space this year. So maybe we're going to put some of that $13 million on this year's cap allocation or whatever.
Right.
But either way, I like it. Once again, thinking next year of Tucker Kraft, Christian Watson, Michael Golden, and LaFleur absolutely loves Watson. Like he's one of the best team guys on this team. If he was healthy, I wouldn't have been surprised if he was made a captain, even, because I know that, like, everyone in the receiver room views him as kind of the leader of that group. So I was a little surprised to see it too. You usually don't see deals like this happening when a guy is injured like Watson is.
Somebody made the point, I believe it was my boy Rodney, that last year MVS and Alan Lazard both signed contracts worth over $10 million for 1 year.
Yes,
or
that's right.
Per year or whatever it was. And it's like, you look at that, and then you look at what Christian Watson provides, it's like, oh, this is, I mean, not that those were good deals. I'm just saying, like, in comparison, this is like a no-brainer if you're looking at those. It's like, this dude's infinitely more talented. So
there was another report that came out today, too. I think the guy's last name was, like, Easton or Eaton something. I don't know. He was wrong about, like, the Packers defensive coordinator hiring in the past. So take what he gets with a grain of salt. But he said that multiple teams have called about Romeo Doubs. I just wouldn't trade Romeo Doubs. If he stays on this team, we saw on Sunday, once again, the leading receiver, could have had a touchdown, didn't, but he's usually like the red zone wide receiver we have on this team too. he's going to get paid. Like you just said, that nobody's got like $10 million. Romeo Doubs, when he gets paid next year, it's probably, I would guess he's going to get like $20 million per year as long as he doesn't not show up for work, get injured, or fall off the face of the earth. He's going to be, you know, he's going to be the probably one of the top three receivers, probably at least the top two, I would say, this year. So if he goes out next year and gets $20 million a year, we're going to get a third or fourth round comp pick. So unless we're getting a third at a minimum for him, I don't want to screw up the mojo for this offense and get rid of him for a draft pick, you know, a year down the line instead of one in this next draft. So that's just how I'm looking at it.
That's a good point. I was going to say that I'm not like against it, just depending on like what you can get for Romeo. You might as well put something in your pocket. But to your point, you can put something in your pocket if he goes and signs a big deal and get that comp pick. And so if you factor in the comp pick, it's like, well, shit, you just let him. I mean, because he is good for the offense. He's great for Jordan Love. He is the security blanket for Jordan Love.
Third down, he's the guy.
He catches the ball. He's the guy. Yes, he's like the third down specialist. Now, Matthew Golden, hopefully next year, sans Romeo Doubs, has a bigger role and everything. We'll see how that develops throughout the year. So I'm not saying like, yeah, we sign him, you know, after the year's over. I mean, he's probably gone, right? I mean, especially with this Christian Watson signing, that's kind of like writing on the wall, I guess. I wasn't even thinking about the comp pick. With the comp pick, it's like, yeah, don't trade him. Don't get rid of him. Keep him around. You know, I don't know. That seems like a no-brainer at this point for a guy who's kind of like the glue guy in the wide receiver room. Maybe not like personality-wise, but like on the field, he's like the glue guy. You know what I mean? Like he's just always there.
He's the epoxy in the field, yes.
he's the bobblehead out there just like snagging balls.
Yeah, so we'll see. And again, like I also wouldn't be shocked if maybe a receiver-needy team in the AFC did offer a second, because, you know, if you remember, it was just a couple of years ago where we offered, was it the Bears? I forgot where he actually got drafted, but Claypool, a second.
Right.
He was traded, I think, to the Dolphins for a second round pick, which we did offer. So I wouldn't be shocked. You know, markets always change, but if someone offers a second round pick, I'd really think about that. But again, when we're going on a run like this, I think we're fine with Romeo.
Well, if you get the opportunity for a second round pick when you don't have a first for the next couple of years, you might have to take it.
That's a good point. Tight ends, Tucker Kraft, 2 for 16, had the touchdown. Very cool. Once again,
sweet baby
boy. He has such soft hands for such a hard ass man. I mean, once again, it was very comparable to the Texans touchdown last year, except, you know, with the Texans one, he was diving for the catch. This one was a little bit easier, but it was on Brian Branch. It appeared he called Branch a, I believe the P word, probably.
Pussy, yeah.
Yes.
Oh, sorry,
no,
the P word.
The P word. I was wondering if...
We'll bleep that.
I wonder if there was like... Because that's bad, but it's like just the way he was saying it, it's like, did he drop a different bad word on him? Maybe too. He was mic'd up too, but unfortunately, for whatever reasons, the Green Bay Packers did not want to release the full audio of that.
Did you see the...
Yes, he was mic'd up. There was like a 4-minute compilation. It's very funny. There must have been a kid. There must have been a kid behind the...
There was.
Yeah.
Hey, that's my birthday. He's like, I don't care. I got more important stuff to think about or something like that.
Tucker! It's my birthday!
I don't care. I got other things to worry about.
Tucker! It's my birthday! I don't care. I got other things to worry about. Just... Love it. I love Tucker so much. It's very funny to just imagine the little kid with the sign behind it, and Tucker just looks at him. And no, the kid goes home. he's like, oh, my favorite player, Tucker Kraft. He was mic'd up. He watches the video. It's like, oh, my, Tucker was talking shit about me on my birthday. So we'll see. He also had his helmet ripped off by Branch. He threw it 15 yards. That was nice.
Also, when he threw it, and then it was like, dude, like, what are you, if you're the Lions, if you're Dan Campbell, you're like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, you could have got away with nothing, because, like, it didn't look like they were going to throw the flag, and they tossed it 20 yards across the field, and they were like, oh, yeah, we have to throw the flag now. Like,
Yeah.
What a moron.
It was funny watching live, too, because it was away from the play, and all of a sudden you saw a Packers helmet fly into view, and it's like, I think I think the flag's on the Lions, and even the mic'd up with Tucker Kraft, too, you watch it. Tucker says nothing. I'm getting ready for him to say something. It's like he just looks around and, like, stares at Branch, and, like, that is it. And then later in the drive, I believe, is when he scores the touchdown, and then he says other things to Branch.
The P word.
Yes. Luke Musgrave, 1 reception, 4 yards. Once again, I mean, the defender started falling, so Luke Musgrave's like, well, I don't want him to feel bad about himself. I'm going to fall over, too. It's just...
What is up? What do we got to do?
I don't. Maybe he...
Musgrave, he needs training wheels.
Maybe he has small feet. Maybe his shoes are too big. I don't know.
Maybe his shoes are too small, and his feet are, like, kind of crammed, and then he can't, like, get a footing.
He's right? Got, like, ballerina shoes on.
Like, stubs. Yeah.
Yeah, I could see that, too. John Fitzpatrick was active for the game. Ben Sims was not. He had the one catch for 2 yards, whatever. But it once again just shows that he's overtaken Ben Sims for the most part. Running backs? Got to talk about the running backs. Josh Jacobs did finish 19 carries, 66 yards, the one touchdown. He had the long of 15. I mean, to start the game, it was, what, his first 8 carries? It felt like 0 yards. It might have actually been zero yards. He did end up scoring a touchdown, obviously, in the fourth quarter, breaking or, you know, making a franchise record for 9 consecutive games with a touchdown, which is pretty good. Good for him. I did not realize that was going on. So either which way, very happy for him. Also, the thing to talk about with the running backs, probably more important than anything else they did. Both him and Chris Brooks, just a great game of pass protection. Josh Jacobs, he said after the game, it was his best game of pass protection ever. And then Chris Brooks, he only had the 9 snaps on offense. But Justice Mosqueda put it out there. I assume it's with Sean Ryan, but, you know, he picks up a stunt from a defensive tackle. That defensive tackle has what? 75 pounds on him?
I was going to say, it's 50 to 80, depending. I don't know.
Like, Jason Spriggs couldn't pick up a stunt to fucking save his life, and we've got a fucking third-string running back that can do it. So, again, and I forgot who said this too, but it's like, that guy, he's going to be able to play in this league for years just because he's that safety blanket for any quarterback out there because he's such a good pass blocker. And it's like, once again, 2 or 3 years ago, we were talking about how the backup running back, Emmanuel Wilson, was good at pass blocking. He only had 2 snaps in this game just because, you know, Brooks has usurped him in that spot. And I gotta quit using that word, but he's just a better pass blocker. Now, Josh Jacobs, too, he's improved so much after he was pretty bad at the beginning of last year.
I gotta say, I actually did notice, like, there was a couple times where I was kind of paying attention to Josh on the play. And then I saw he was pass blocking, and I was like, ugh, like, you're always kind of like when he's pass blocking, like last year, I just kind of felt like, you know, he's going to buy you a little bit of time, but it's not like, you know, you used to have Aaron Jones who would just like stop a guy in his tracks. I was super impressed with Josh Jacobs and his, like, I actually was thinking about that during the game. I was like, oh, like, that was like nice. Like, he bought him a whole freaking second. When in the past, I feel like we're getting like a chip and then whoever it is in the backfield. So, props to Josh Jacobs, like, you can teach an old dog new tricks, because, like, he came in, and it was like, this dude can't pass block at all, and here we are this year, and he looked pretty good.
Yeah, just a year later, he's so much better, and if you remember, too, like, Aaron Jones, when he first came in the league, he was really bad, and now he's, you know, one of the better pass blocking running backs in the league, too, unfortunately.
Was he
for the
really
Vikings,
bad to start?
Yes, he was very bad. That's okay. One of the reasons why he didn't play much early in his career, too, aside from the injuries.
Okay.
The other note that I have for Josh Jacobs, very, very important. I can't remember a player who gets their shoulder pads exposed more than him. Like, it's so often after plays where, like, both of his shoulder pads, you see the gray, you know, just seeping out of the sides.
Yeah, his jersey gets pulled up over his pads.
It always needs to get fixed. I don't know if it's just the new jerseys and they're a little tighter. Maybe they come off a little easier and the pads are a little bit smaller, but... It seems like every other carry at this point, we're seeing them shoulder pads dangling out. Offensive line, pretty good game. Once again, no sacks given up. It was Rashid Walker, Banks, Elton Jenkins, a rotation of Sean Ryan and Jordan Morgan at right guard, which was a little surprising. I think we thought it was going to happen at left tackle, but I'm glad we're not rotating tackle. It's guard and then Zach Tom at right tackle. To finish the game, you know, Zach Tom got hurt on the non pick six play from Jordan Love, kind of a weird play where he flew up in the air trying to avoid Jordan Love, and he hurt his, it was first announced as a hip. Apparently it's oblique. So Kennard came in, the guy we just traded the sixth round pick for. He played pretty well. Overall, the team that we gave up six total pressures, which is pretty good. Once again, no sacks, six pressures. I will take that. Anthony Belton came in on the last series too. I think it was three snaps he had at right tackle. Aaron Banks also got hurt. Those are kind of the big things going into this week. Aaron Banks did tell Tom Silverstein after the game that he was held out for precautionary. Either which way, I'm curious to see what happens. I'm going to guess one of the two are going to be out on Sunday, or Thursday, I should say. But, I mean, overall, like you said at the top, it wasn't the maulers and the run game that, you know, was kind of the talk. Like, we're revamping this offense to be a run-first offensive line. The big fat fucks up front did not happen to start the game, but pass protection was really, really good.
I will say, if Tom ends up being out this week, which definitely seems feasible given the short week and the fact that, you know, he didn't come back in the rest of the game, I don't feel bad about Darren Kennard. He actually, do you remember that trap play where Jacobs gets sprung? Mm-hmm. He sprung that block. Yep. Like, that was, I mean, I was like, oh, like, that's not, he didn't screw anything up. He hopped in. I didn't even, like, notice that he wasn't, you know, Zach Tom for a little bit, but I did notice that he was making impact blocks in the run game. So it's like, oh, this is actually like not bad. So I feel good about it regardless. It would be cool to see Aaron Banks play as well. I mean, I think that that would be fun. I mean, he's obviously not a tackle. But I don't know. It looked like too Belton got some snaps.
Yeah, I mentioned that.
It
was the last drive. It almost seemed more like...
Oh, it was just the last drive.
They wanted to get him like experience or something. They were just going to run the ball anyways. But it was kind of a weird rotation because I think after Tom went out, we all expected the first round pick last year. Like Jordan Morgan to come in. And that's not what happened. So that was kind of... That's why I'm like, I don't know what's going to happen with the injuries and who's going to start. Because I would, if Tom's out, I'm like, well, you would think you'd put Jordan Morgan out there, but the way that they put Kennard out there, maybe it's him. But either which way, I mean, once again, Goody masterclass, giving up a sixth round pick for a guy who steps in. You got to feel a lot better about the depth right than you did this time a couple weeks ago. Special teams, Daniel Whelan, awesome. Whelan and Dylan, 54.7 yard average per punt. He had a long of 65, which is tied for the longest in the league so far this year. Only 1 week, but still. McManus made both of his field goals and all three extra points. And then Nyman, I think, or Neiman, Nyman, Screaming Neiman.
Screaming Neiman.
Great. I loved when he texted me that during the game. What is it? Zach Neiman, whatever the fuck it is.
It can't be. If his name's Neiman, we have to change it. It has to be.
If it's Nyman.
If it's Nyman.
Screaming Nyman.
It can't be Nyman. It has to be Screaming Neiman.
I think he had like four tackles, but either which way, the one punt coverage, it was great how he just ran
it
down there.
It was great.
And once again, when we picked him up, he said, I want to be dominant on special teams. So he was dominant on Sunday. With that, oh boy, first time in quite a while, we will have take news for the week.
Football time. Take news.
All right, take news for the week. Nothing big here. This is something that I was more concerned with earlier in the week than what kind of came out today with Jason Wilde, one of the better beat reporters for the Packers, digging up some more information. So after the game, Mike Silver, who's kind of in the NFL circles, a reporter, national guy, if you remember, like on Twitter, especially back in the day, like his Twitter profile picture was him with Rodgers when Rodgers is like throwing his hands up after the fail Mary. Like Mike Silver was kind of on the field at the end of that. So he was buddies with Rodgers, but he has a lot of good sources all around the league. So first, his story that he put out for The Athletic, which Jason Wilde also helps report for from time to time, or at least he did in the past. Silver put out this piece mostly talking to Micah Parsons. But part of the piece here was very interesting, and I tweeted this out from the account, and I'll just read the I'll read this part here talking about the board. So once again, you know, I hate Mark Murphy, yada, yada, yada. The big thing I hate about him is that he gave more power to himself, which would also give power to the executive board, which would be above the president and CEO. If anyone's going to fire the president or CEO of the Packers, it would have to come from the board. So if the president and CEO has more power, that means the board has more power. So whatever. This is what Mike Silver wrote. At a board of directors meeting in early August with Parsons and the at a standoff in negotiations on a contract extension, the prospect of trying to trade for a fifth-year edge rusher was discussed. Policy, according to multiple witnesses, was emphatically in favor for the move, viewing it in terms of, if not now, when. The case was further bolstered when Executive Vice President / Director of Football Operations, Russ Ball, our contract guy, assured board members that the franchise could afford to meet Parsons' contract demands. Quote, it was clear that this is a new era, said one Packers front office official. Quote, there had been moves that weren't made in the past, like trying to trade for then Oakland Raiders star pass rusher Khalil Mack in 2018. Mark Murphy wanted to do it, but the board was against it, and he didn't want to force it on them. This time, there was talk about not taking the fans for granted, even though we have all those years of sellouts and long waiting list. It was a really good discussion. So I read that and I'm like, holy shit, I want to kill myself. Because why? right now, once again, this whole thing with the power of the Packers, with whoever the president CEO having power over the football operations, when in the 90s, you know, it was only the GM. The GM made all the football operations. Ron Wolf and Bob Harlan saved the Green Bay Packers. They probably wouldn't be around if Bob Harlan was never hired to the Packers president. One, because he kept the Packers in Green Bay by making sure the Lambeau Field extension happened with Brown County. Like, he was literally knocking on doors to get votes, which barely passed, so that Lambeau Field got their expansion, which they needed at the time because it was, you know, fucking corrugated metal. And now it's, you know, it's like the best stadium in the NFL today. Anyways, he also hired Ron Wolf. Ron Wolf was not going to sign on to be the Packers GM unless they changed the power structure where he was in charge of football operations. Now, in the 70s and 80s, when the Packers sucked ass, it's because the executive board and the president and CEO had a lot of power over football operations. There was, I forgot where I heard this in the past, but apparently Bart Starr or maybe Forrest Gregg or one of those guys back in the day literally would go to the board and present his game plan to them at one point in time. Like, that's how fucking stupid it was back in the day.
Insane.
Yeah. Insane. And again, everything's good now, but my worry is just when or if that ever happens, you know, 10, 20, 30 years from now, shit would really devolve. And then we'd look like a team like the fucking Bears or the Cowboys, where it's like, who's really, I just want to know who I should be mad at for the most part. So this was very scary to see, because again, it's fine, but it's like, did the executive board really put a kibosh on the Khalil Mack trade? Were they really the ones that finalized this here? So Jason Wilde on Wilde and Tausch, he talked about it briefly, saying, okay, I'm going to, because he heard this little part of the article here, and he reached out to one of his sources, and this is him talking on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy on ESPN Milwaukee. I believe this is Gabe following up, just saying, I don't remember exactly what he says at the beginning of this clip, but it's something about, you know, what's going on with the executive board. Do they really have this much power?
Does the board have more power than we realize?
No. So, and again, you know, Mike and I have known each other for 25 years, and he's really good at getting people to talk. I like to think I've got a little bit of ability to do that, too. I don't know who that person is that's quoted, but I talked to someone who's on the board, and he said, look, that's not how this works. Now, because I read him the entire couple of paragraphs that you had sent me, and I went back and read the whole thing because I obviously have a subscription. But he said, look, the part about it being a new era, the part about it being Ed Policy being aggressive, and what's the line in there, if not now, when, or something like that. Like, there's, he thought that's probably true. I think that's an accurate depiction of a shift in mentality. But he said, look, on the board, and remember, there's a difference between the board, which are a lot of people, and then the executive committee, which is a much smaller group, right? But they don't, that is not how things work here. So I don't know who Mike talked to that was under the impression that there's any sort of involvement from the board on football decisions. Because I do think, whether it was Murphy before or Ed Policy now, I do think the president weighs in on stuff. And I do think he talks through stuff with Goody and LaFleur. They meet regularly, again, whether it's Murphy or Ed Policy. So I don't doubt that there might have been, I don't want to say pressure brought to bear, that's too strong of a phrase, but that there was, you know, Ed chimed in, put it that way. But the person that I talked to said that they get a football report, and basically it's slightly better than what Goody does during the shareholders meeting, which is barely nothing.
Sure.
I think that whoever Mike talked to, I think was ill-informed in terms of the board's involvement. And as I said to the guy that I know on the board, I was like, you know, I'm not here to carry water for you. So, you know, if this is the kind of stuff that the board is doing, you know, I would appreciate if you're honest with me. He's like, look, there was a time in this organization's long history where there were a bunch of business people on this board who thought that they had way more power than they had. And it turned out they did have more power, and it was what caused this team to think for so long. That is not how things operate now. So I want to reassure those that read that, because you're right, I got it from about seven other people, there has not been some sort of shift where now, you know, Johnny Restaurateur and a guy that makes widgets is starting to have influence over whether they pursue a player or not.
So, you know, I'm talking a lot here, but very, very good news. I'm very happy Jason really dug on that, because once again, you couldn't have much worse problems from an organizational standpoint than that. And for whatever source that is to say, you know, that's not exactly what's going on, reassuring to hear. There's the board members. There's like 40 some of them. I believe Leroy Butler is one of those now. He was recently elected in the last 2 years. And then there's the executive board. I don't know exactly how those two things square out, but it seems like it's mostly just they're the stamp of approval of something at the very end. Chewy there at the end, Mark Chimer, the old tight end who had, you know, hot tub stuff in the past. He did say that, like, back in the day, he was talking to Favre, and Favre was saying, hey, I'm about to get this massive contract extension. The board just has to approve it. So I just think they're kind of that final stamp on these big moves and hopefully not getting in the way. But either way, you hear those quotes off the get-go and you're like, fuck, what is really going on here?
But I kind of read it, I don't know, maybe I misread or misheard something, but wasn't it more of like Mark Murphy made the decision to not move forward on like the Khalil Mack trade? Isn't that what was in, like, wasn't that something that was cited in the Mike Silver? What did I say it's, the wrong?
Nope, you're right. In the piece, it's Mark Murphy wanted to do it, but the board was against it and he didn't want to force it on them. That's the big part that Wilde kind of took umbrage with.
And I think it's almost like misinterpreted that like the board could have stopped it. It's not really that the board could have stopped it. He made the decision, but I think it is feasible that Mark Murphy was like, nah, I don't want to ruffle any feathers. This might not get me my advisory spot at UWGB, so I'm just going to not do it.
That's one thing I wanted to look into too. I was like, how many people on the executive board have connections to UWGB?
I was going to look into that. And you're going to be mad.
Then there was 40 some people. I'm like, I'm not going to do that. Maybe I could have AI do that at some point.
There you go.
The other thing that Wilde talks about later in there is he says emphatically that he knows that Goody made a legit offer to the Raiders for Khalil Mack. So he thinks Mike's reporting is a little spotty here because he knows for a fact that happened. It was just the fact that the Bears were a shittier team. Those picks were going to be more valuable, and that's why it happened. So either way, I don't...
Good job by the Raiders. The Bears do suck.
Exactly. I thought this was going to be a bigger thing when it was first putting together the notes for this podcast. But either way, hey, maybe this means I'm going to bitch less about Mark Murphy and, you know, the dark overlords of the Green Bay Packers here going forward. All right. With that, Todd, are you ready?
I am ready.
The first official stump spending for the year. Last week, that didn't count, right? That was just, we'll see if we can or not. Now it's the regular season. Now it's preseason. This is Stump Spenny Billy, who's on the podcast during the offseason and the bye week, not the regular season. He writes the trivia questions for me. He asks me one trivia question per week about the Packers. And this is this
week. Is Spencer an idiot week one? Stump Spenny, in Green Bay's 2021 home victory over Washington, which former Packers running back recorded 3 of his 11 career carries? Which Packers running back?
Can you say that again? You broke up a little bit.
Green Bay's 2021 home victory over Washington, which former Packers running back recorded 3 of his 11 total career carries?
2011.
No. 2021. It was 11. You know, 2021 was the year.
Yeah.
11.
I don't know why I said 2011. Okay. I knew it was 2021.
We're on the same page.
Just lining things up, there weren't many different running backs on the roster because it's A.J. Dillon, it's Aaron Jones, it's Jamal Williams. The only one I can think of who actually would have gotten some carries would be Dexter Williams.
No, it is not Dexter Williams. Do you want the answer? Would you like another guess for fun points? You got it wrong, but...
Was it a free agent pickup or a draft pick?
Draft pick.
God, really? It wasn't Devontae Mays or whatever. Who was it?
Rhymes with Hylan Quilliams. Hill, not Williams.
Kylan Hill. Yeah, I guess I could have. Yeah,
Hylan Hill.
I almost think of him more as a training camp guy and a kick returner. God, yeah, I guess that makes sense. I don't know if you said what week that game happened, but okay, that's because I don't remember Dexter ever getting much play on the active roster either. So I guess it was just going to be between those two.
Yep. Nope. That's it. Sorry.
All right. Well, 0-1 for the season so far. Very good. I have been stumped. Todd, are you ready for the preview of the Commanders game?
Indeed.
Cool. Okay. Game preview. We are playing Thursday night on Amazon Prime against the Washington Commanders. Al Michaels and Kirk Herbstreit on the call. What do you think of Kirk Herbstreit and his dog?
What about his dog? I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, you haven't seen this year? Yeah, you don't follow college football much. Nope. I don't either. He had a dog. He had a beautiful golden retriever. It died last year, the year before. Everyone was sad. It was sad. Dogs dying is very sad. But then he got a new dog. The dog kind of comes with him on game day stuff. And now it's like, okay, do you really have to bring your dog everywhere?
It comes with him?
You know, it's, yeah, it's like on set and like walks on the field with him and stuff. It's like, I don't know if maybe just the attention to it has made it more of a negative. Like, I wouldn't really care. But now that you see it all the time and I'm aware of it, it's like, I don't know. And I love dogs. I fucking love dogs. If I got $1 billion tomorrow, I would quit my job and I would buy like a big old property out in the woods and I would just rescue a bunch of dogs.
Oh,
like, that's what I would do.
You love dogs? Name every dog.
Yes. Fuck. Rottweiler.
Okay, you got one.
That's all I got. Yeah. Kickoff is 7:15. Packers are 3.5-point favorites. Once
is it 7:15 or is it
gamble?
Is it 7 Eastern? Or coverage starts 7 Eastern? Maybe that's what I saw, and I was mad because that's
saw
really
7,
early.
I saw 7:15. I know the Monday night game kicked off last night at 7:15 too, so we'll see. The over-under is 48 points. Oh, I was going to say, you get 3 points as the home team, so Vegas thinks the Packers are half a point better than the Washington Commanders, who were in the NFC Championship game last year. The Commanders are 1-0, obviously going up against us, coming off a week one victory over the Giants under head coach Dan Quinn. Now in his second year with the Commanders, they have a 12-5 record from last year. Obviously, once again, going to the 2014 NFC Championship game, their offense and defense showed promise in week one, winning 6-21. The Commanders, or whatever the Washington team, has not won at Lambeau since 1988. Overview in 2024, the Commanders ranked 5th in points scored at 28.5 and 4th in rushing at 154 rushing yards per game, with a passing game that ranked 17th with 215 yards per game. Defensively, they were 18th in points allowed at 23 points per game, tied for 9th in takeaways at 24. They also added to their roster Deebo Samuel, Larry Tunsil, and Von Miller. God, Von Miller has got to be fucking old as hell now. I think he's still got a pretty good contract too.
I did watch a little bit of that game. I was paying attention a little bit, and when they mentioned that Von Miller was on the team, I was like, how freaking old is this guy? Like, this is insane. And he, to be honest, I didn't see him on the field all that much, for what it's worth, but I don't know. He was out there. I'm sure it's just pass rush downs.
Exactly. Week one, they beat the Giants. They had 220 rushing yards, and they held New York to 231 total yards. The Commanders lead the all-time series against us, 20-17. But once again, our last meeting in 2022, we beat them 23-21. I don't know. Irrelevant. I forgot to delete that. Blame AI. Key players on offense, Jaden Daniels, again, the number two overall pick last year. Last week, he was 17-24, 189 yards, two touchdowns, and no interceptions. He also rushed for 44 yards on 8 carries. Last year he was really, really good. We all remember that, so we'll have to see what Micah Parsons and the defense does to contain him. If you remember last year, we had a couple of those games. Who did we play early on? Well, it was Jalen Hurts, Trevor Lawrence.
Running quarterbacks are always tough for a Green Bay defense.
The little guy on the Cardinals, Kyle Murray.
Kyler, yep.
Yeah, all those guys, whatever. He kind of sucks. Terry McLaurin, number one receiver. He caught 5 passes for 68 yards. And a touch, that's not true. That's not from last week. He did not have that. I have him on a fantasy team. Whatever. He's really good. Austin Eckler, he's the running back. Kind of a pass-catching guy now, too, but he's very old. They have Bill, the rookie.
When I read that, I thought what's his first name?
I don't remember.
It's like Jacory.
Everyone calls him Bill. They also have Deebo Samuel now, obviously trading him from the San Francisco 49ers. He had 4 catches of 55 yards last week, also 12 yards rushing. And again, the left tackle, Laremy Tunsil, didn't allow any sacks last week, but he is their new offensive tackle. Defense, Frankie Louvu, he had 8 tackles and tackle for loss last year, whatever. He was one of the top 100 players in the NFL, according to whatever stupid, if they actually voted in it or not. Bobby Wagner is on that team now, too. 6 tackles last week, 1 pass deflection. He's old. He might not be good anymore. We'll see. Jonathan Allen is on that team. He had a sack last week, and he had 7.5 last year. Marshawn Lattimore, the corner, he had 3 tackles and a pass breakup. He had a PFF grade of 81.2 last year in coverage. And then Quan Martin, he had 5 tackles and 1 interception with 4 all of last year. So those are kind of the key players on defense. Packers, looking at them, I don't really know who's banged up on the Commanders. We have a couple injuries. Once again, I mean, Banks didn't practice. Elton Jenkins didn't practice. Quay Walker was limited. Baron Sorrell was limited. We'll see what happens there. Bo Melton did not practice. He didn't even play on defense, so he got hurt on special teams. Brenton Cox did not practice. So there's a couple guys. Again, it's mostly the offensive line, those two. Nate Hobbs, he was limited. I would assume he's going to be out just to give him a longer week to, you know, get healthy before whoever we play week 3. I think it's the Browns. But, you know, he had surgery about a month ago. Either way, Commanders, I feel like if we weren't so banged up after the first game, I'd feel better about having a Thursday game this early in the season instead of late, but kind of hitting us at a bad time when we're already banged up. Once again, you know, we talked about at the beginning of the year, the first two games here, the Lions and the Commanders, two teams that we potentially could be playing deep in the playoffs. Again, the Lions are probably going to suck, but the Commanders, who knows, should be a fun game. Again, two young faces of the NFL with Jaden Daniels for the Commanders here. Todd, what are you thinking going into this game?
I mean, just after watching that week one, I feel really good. Obviously, the injuries don't help, but I feel like there isn't enough key injuries. I shouldn't say that because obviously Zach Tom is a big one. But outside of that, it just feels like there isn't a lot of like key injuries. And I feel like it's those depth positions. Makes me less worried. I am a little bit worried about, I mean, they put a lot of yards up. Like, their offense can be scary. And you talk about a running quarterback, they kind of have just like a little bit of everything that makes you worried on defense. Like I said, running quarterback, he can also throw. Then you've got that Bill, who's, I think he had like 82 yards. Actually ran pretty well. I don't know, I watched a little bit of the game. But then you've got, you know, Deebo, which, you know, scares me a little bit on the outside. If Deebo catches a ball, you know, in a little screen pass, like that's a little bit scary. But I don't know. I feel good just the way our defense looked. We'll need to be aggressive. I mean, they did beat up on the Giants, so it's not really like that right. impressive. Like, you kind of have to look right. at that. But they did put up like 430 yards, and it was a balanced attack. So who knows? They were a 12-win team last year too, so they're not bad. But
yeah, they're not going to creep up on anyone this year after last year being probably one of the bigger surprises in the NFL. Yeah, it's. I wish we had a longer week to kind of sit on right. this a bit, you know, because it is a premium game. I mean, the first week of the NFL, usually there's a lot of stinkers, and the noon games did kind of suck. I mean, shout out to Aaron Rodgers for that once again come from behind victory. I guess he's not that washed, even though all of his touchdowns are pretty easy to throw. But all the noon games kind of sucked, but the kickoff game, the Friday game, our game, and then the Monday night game were all pretty good, so maybe this will be a nice entertaining game for everyone at home watching as well, not just us Packer and Commander fans. But yeah, I don't know, we'll see. I think we match up all right. Hopefully we have one of the two between Tom and Banks. I feel like Banks is gonna play, but I could be completely wrong here. But Todd, I think we're ready. Score predictions, what is your score prediction for this game?
I'm gonna give you Billy's first. Billy's score prediction for the week is 27-19 Packers. And I forget, do we usually do a bold prediction with it, or do we?
No, we do all we do all the score and then all the bold.
Okay.
So what is your score?
I had 31-21 Pack.
Okay.
Just feels like we build on it, right? A couple big plays. It feels like the defense. I mean, a little bit more points, right?
He's a big fantasy name now, yeah.
I feel like you put up 30 points. That's like about as good as it gets in the NFL these days, especially early on when the defense kind of has like a little bit of an advantage before those offenses get going. So I feel good about it. But yeah, I mean, I think they're going to get, even if we're up, they're going to get some garbage time. Touchdown, right?
Just like last week.
Just like
yeah.
last week. It's going to happen.
I'm feeling the same way as you. It just feels like 30 points feels right. I have 31-24. Again, like we had that streak the back half of last year where I think it was like eight games in a row where we scored at least 30. It just didn't feel like it. You know, last week it felt like more than 27. We only really tried in the first half, it seemed like, for the most part. So 31-24, maybe a bit of a comeback in the second half for the Commanders. Maybe we just lose outright. I don't fucking know. That could happen too. Sometimes we get a little too optimistic, and then it's like,
good,
oh,
but it won't.
Maybe we're not that good. But this year, we're really fucking good. So, Todd, what is Billy's bold prediction?
Bold prediction is a defensive / special teams TD for the Pack.
Okay, I guess that's
fair. Was kind of hemming. Are you doing a Micah Parsons bold prediction?
Not exactly.
I'm going to stay away from it then. I'm going to say, I feel like two picks, but is that bold enough? I feel like two picks is what I'm feeling. I feel like
I don't know how many picks he throws.
Right. I don't really have a good handle on that either. My thought is like the pressure causes the picks, right? That's kind of what we saw in week one with the pick that Evan Williams picked up. But is two enough? Is that bold enough? Like, two picks is a really good game, but is it bold? Do I have to say three?
Maybe like pick the players. Maybe three. I don't know.
It's almost like that's not even like that's not even hard, because I would say like I would say like Evan Williams and Xavier Williams. Like, you know.
Perfect.
Okay.
Why don't we do that? Two picks combined by the safeties.
Okay.
Does that work?
Two safety picks.
Okay. Okay. That works. So, again, my bold prediction, I looked it up. The most that Jaden McDaniels has been sacked in a game in his NFL career was 8 against the Saints last year, which is Jeez. Weird to read. So I have 8.5 sacks for the Packers. More than 8. I think it's going to be the most he's sacked in his career. That's my bold prediction. You know, I'm just steamrolling off of Micah Parsons, Rashawn Gary.
That would be insane.
We'll see what happens. He's a running quarterback. I wouldn't be surprised if it actually turns out he gets sacked like twice. But Lambeau, I'm feeling myself after watching the defense on Sunday. I'm very happy with the pass rush, only rushing 4. And Micah Parsons, you know, once again getting more into football shape. He said he was like huffing and puffing at the end of the game. So maybe that's that was part of it too, why they kept him in the game. It's like, we got to condition this guy a little bit more. So, hey, that's
going
to work out.
Like that good, Thursday. They're like, we're going to condition you in the game. So,
please don't get hurt. Financially, it will ruin us. Please don't get hurt. With that, that's the preview of the Commanders game. I do have one correction from last week. I did this before. I'm going to try to do this again this year, where I have corrections that we misspoke on from the previous week. This isn't really a fact that I got wrong or something, but listening back, you know, for quality control, I did hear that I said Carrington Valentine could be the most talented player on defense. I meant the cornerback room. Right. I meant the corners. I did not mean the entire defense. That is not true. I still think he will finish the season as CB1, but he is not the most talented guy on the defense.
Thank you for correcting that. I think everybody knew that wasn't true. Maybe they thought it was satire.
Maybe no one actually heard it, but I was like, oh my God, what a dumb thing to say. I need to correct myself. Oh yeah. Well, you should have got on me then. That's part of the, you know, you gotta, when we say dumb things, you gotta call.
Oh, I feel like I forgot to mention Scary Terry. We didn't even talk about, did we talk about Terry McLaurin?
I just mentioned him. I read off the incorrect AI stats where it said he had a touchdown in like 60 yards, which wasn't the case.
I will say the little bit that I paid attention, I was kind of back and forth between that game and the Steelers game. It looked like he could have had such a huge game. He got overthrown like 3 times. So for what it's worth, he only had like 27 yards on 4 targets. So I don't know. Interesting. But I mean, Scary Terry is, in fact, as his name would imply, a bit scary. So,
Terry. Oh, okay. Yeah. With that, if you want to leave a 5-star review, that would be cool on Apple or Spotify or rating, whatever. It's like, hey, you're listening. Oh, you got this far. Oh, man, we were really, really entertaining, weren't we? Weren't we? Come on, leave 5 stars. Come on, get that stupid algorithm going, and then we'll have hundreds of thousands of more people listening to us. We had no comments. We had no new reviews. So once again, I'm just crying to myself right now. But God, I think after that performance,
half, right? I think after that performance, we deserve some reviews. Not our performance, the Packers' performance. We deserve some reviews, right?
Yes.
Share
just
the love.
Leave a review on Apple. Leave a comment on Spotify. Say, wow, I love the Packers. And if you want, we will send you a free koozie. Email us at pmppodcast@gmail.com or DM us on Twitter at pmppod. That's about all I had. NFC North, you care about the Bears, Vikings, Todd?
No, I don't. Neither of them looked good in the first half, so that was good.
Well, Bears look good in the first half.
Bears Vikings look good in their good first in the two half. Drives. Yeah. And then the Vikings look good in the last quarter, the fourth quarter. Yes. That was about it. I don't know. It's to be seen. Obviously, like the quarterbacks for both those teams, I mean, they're going to live and die by their quarterback. So I don't know. We'll see what happens. But I was going to ask you, after week one, would you change your score prediction for the year? I think we both had, were we both at 12?
Record prediction?
Yeah, oh, yeah, sorry, record prediction for the year. We both had 12. Would you change it?
I would probably add a win. I thought you were going to ask this. The odds changed in who will win the NFC North. We were like plus 150 or plus 170, meaning if you bet $100 and we won the NFC North, we are now, you would win 150 or 170 bucks. We are now minus money immediately after beating the
That's
Lions.
That's what I'm
so again.
I feel like we're 2 wins better than I originally thought.
I think we jumped in Super Bowl odds too, where we're like top 3 now. I want to say I should have looked it up, but I did hear that.
Because the thing is too is like Micah has not settled in at all.
I know.
That's
we added one guy, and it's like, oh, instead of like the fake. What was simulated rush?
Simulated
it's like,
pressure.
Oh, now we just rush our front 4 guys and we're actually making plays.
Now instead of sending a hologram, we send a real man.
Yeah. It's Micah Parsons, and it's not even a real man. He's a fucking superhuman.
Shout out to whoever did. Did you see the where it's like the what's the guy who does like the nature documentary? He's like the British guy.
Yeah.
You know who it is. And it's like him talking about a lion. Oh, you don't know who I'm talking about? Oh, Mm-mm. There's a guy who, like, if you heard his voice, you're like, oh, that's the dude from all the nature documentaries.
It was like NFL memes that tweeted it out.
But yeah, like, that was a good one where it's like, oh, the lion stalks the... Anyways, you know.
But yeah, NFC North, I mean, I don't want to say I would be shocked, but I'd be pretty surprised if we don't win the NFC North after what we've seen after the first week. JJ McCarthy might be okay. Caleb Williams might actually suck. He's such a weird quarterback where it's like he gets the ball and he forgets what the play is. And then he just runs around behind his offensive line. And then sometimes he has a really fun play. Like, he's fun to watch, but he's fun to watch not as your quarterback.
Yeah. I also hate him. Right? Like, he's like the most hateable quarterback in the league. Wouldn't you say? Who would you hate more?
God. He might be at this point.
Like, hateable.
I've kind of not liked Dak at times.
True. Yeah, he's up there. But Dak's kind of like, so many... Dak's kind of like a puppy that you've kicked.
It's weird that he's like an older guy in the league now, too. That's the thing. There's so many young guys. Weird. It's like they haven't been around enough to hate.
Yeah, it's so weird. Like,
ugh. Yeah, you're probably right. It's probably Caleb Williams.
It has to be.
And he's a bear. With that... Yeah, and he's a bear. That makes it a little bit easier, too. With that, I don't have anything else. Do you have anything else?
No. This is exciting. How fun. How excited are you?
Dude, I was going to say it off the top, too. Like, after we won on Sunday, I was just walking around the house. You know, my wife's just doing stuff. And I would literally just start dancing.
Oh.
Like, I was just dancing because I was so happy. I'm like, this is... My life is great. My life is amazing right now. All these guys that I don't actually know, these adults playing a stupid game, won and look really good. And for whatever reason, that makes the sun look brighter in this house right now.
It is. There's nothing quite like, and it doesn't, I mean, a dominant week one win when, like, you've been picked to be, like, third in the division by, like, half of the talking heads and you had to hear that. I know, but it's just like you have to hear all the dumb shit and then the season starts and it's like, oh, yeah. We kicked the shit out of who everybody has as, like, the only people that could contend with the Eagles, is what they were saying.
We kicked the shit out of a team that has been kicking the shit out of us for 3 years.
Yes. I don't know. It was a lot of fun. It was a great day for football. Got to sit around, just, like, watch football all day. So great. You can't beat it.
I love my life. We also had a nice week of weather here, too, where it was like 60 degrees, so all is right in the world with that. We've gone pretty long. Anything else in that besides happiness, Todd?
Just happiness.
All right, peace and love, AJ Dillon, take us out.
To anybody on Twitter or whatever, you can't do what we're doing. Just enjoy, just watch.
Anywhere I quit my job, yeah, because it just won't pay. Anywhere I quit my job, I worked all year. Then they took my money away, yeah, well, now I don't care. Cause they ain't working like me down here. And I said, hey now, little baby, I'm going deeper down.
Hello and welcome to... Oof.
Oh, well, that was the loudest one ever.
That's why I always...
I thought you were yelling.
Nope. If you're quiet for a little bit and then you speak up a little bit, it will turn into a big old blue streak.
Mm. Pop, pop.
Like a Smurf.
Pra-pa-pa, pra-pa-pa, coming.
Poop. Pra-pa-pa-pa? I was gonna. Were we raking this time last year?
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.